24th. We'll have local headlines, sports, weather, all time permitting, coming up for you this half hour. We're brought to you by Geno's Kitchen and Appliance Center, specializing in quality GE appliances. On this Wednesday, the 6 month, God, dare I say, anniversary of the conflict when it started in Ukraine. But we want to welcome back in. He is a former retired Army officer, military intelligence infantry officer, participated in the invasion of Panama in 1989, also served in Iraq in 2003. He's been at Chico State in the Political Science Criminal Justice Department since 2007, focuses on U.S. foreign policy, Middle East, and also international politics. John Crosby joining us on the KPAY Morning News. John, good morning.
Good morning, Scott.
Hey, appreciate you again joining us. We had you on when the conflict first had started to kind of give us a layout of what it was all about. And now here we are 6 months in. And Mike Bach is here with us as well, John. So we just want to start with, now that the conflict, here it is, it seems like it's ongoing. We heard reports now that President Biden has pledged more aid to Ukraine and their military, $3 billion for training and such. So here we are today, 6 months in, John. Take a look back at the last 6 months and kind of look ahead for us. What is Putin still trying to accomplish? I mean, is it going to be another is it going to be their Vietnam again, or like it was in Afghanistan for them, or what? How can we look at this?
Putin's objectives and Russia's objectives have changed since the beginning of the war. Initially, they wanted a regime change, a quick one, a snap, and then you take out, much like the Soviets did in Afghanistan in December of 1980. Obviously, that failed. His airborne forces and his lightning assault forces failed to achieve that objective in taking Kiev and removing Zelensky. And so now that the military has failed the initial regime change objective, I believe he's now pulled back to, more moderate ambitions, just to basically hold what he's got, which is about nearly 20% of the Ukraine. Obviously, he would like Odessa, the Black Sea port, but I think that's beyond his capabilities now. But I think that he's done this before in Georgia in 2008. He's taken pieces. He took about 20% of Georgia in 2008. Not our Georgia, their Georgia. And I think that's like a frozen conflict. And I think what he wants to see is that to go back to that sense of normalcy where he takes a chunk of a country and the West just shrugs and moves on. And that's what I believe he's trying to aim for now. He's hoping for a really, really cold winter and for the Europeans to come around and say, okay, we're going to throw the Ukrainians under the bus and accept this chunk of Ukraine now being part of the Russian Empire, and so he can claim some sort of victory, and then try and get back to a sense of selling oil to the West, and then recovering his economy, because his economy is going to get his economy is getting hammered, and it will continue to get severely hammered if he continues with this policy of open aggression against the Ukrainian people.
How bad is the miscalculation with his invasion of Ukraine playing at home? I know through state-sponsored media he's trying to drum up support. There have been supportive entities in Russia, but there's also been pushback. It's been underground and quiet because there have been penalties levied against those that are overt in their defense or their opposition to the action. But from a political analyst's perspective, the miscalculation here by Putin appears to be massive, and I think he didn't really understand the resolve of the world at large and how they would react.
Yeah, part of what he's doing is reframing his propaganda people are reframing the message from, there are neo-Nazis or there's Nazis or fascists in Kiev and we need to remove them, to now it's not only the Nazis in Kiev, it's the West and the Western civilization, NATO. They're trying to undermine the Russian people. And so he's trying to make this into a grander we are facing off against, you know, the devil. When we look at, say, you know, the Iranian protests, one of the big thing was, you know, the United States was the great Satan. So from a certain perspective, and Putin and the, you know, the Orthodox Church in Russia definitely look at the West as the great Satan. We are the ones that are seducing people into this path of sloth and gluttony and you know, homosexuality and all this stuff that they're talking about. And so they're framing that we're in this civilizational fight against this evil that's trying to penetrate our society. And that's how they're trying to frame it in Russia. And I think that's playing to a certain large percentage of the Russian people. Much like you get, I mean, those same kinds of themes played in America, that the West, you know, this wokeism, whatever, is destroying America, and we need to fight back. I mean, it's a very similar theme that's being played in the United States, and it's being played throughout the world. The fact that the West is, I mean, Boko Haram, the terrorist organization or the terrorists in Africa, Boko Haram means knowledge or books are forbidden because knowledge is bad. And so this idea, and what's playing out in Russia, is that the West, in this decadence, is softening, and Russian people, the strong Russian people, need to stand up against this and show the world that, you know, we can fight against it. And I think that's playing to a large percentage of the Russian people, much like it plays, I mean, to audiences in the West.
Hey, John, do you think this recent, you know, we saw the report earlier, I think it was earlier this week or late last week, of the daughter of one of Putin's you know, he bombed, and it was supposed to be the guy driving the vehicle, but he had switched vehicles with his daughter supposedly that day, that morning. And then, of course, the bomb explosion kills her, one of Putin's big supporters. Anything tied with that to this whole conflict? Or is it just looking at Putin saying we've had enough?
Yeah, I mean, basically what I just said was coming from this guy's mouth, this idea that, you know, we're in the battle against the West is bad, Russian nationalism, Russian people need to regain their Russian strength, sense of Russianness, whatever the hell that means. I'm sorry, whatever that means, Russianness. And that's that whole idea, and he was one of the main philosophical minds behind that thought. You know, her death, the Russians have a habit of killing their own people to get public opinion on their side. When we look at Chechnya in 1993 and 1994, everybody pretty much believes that the FSB basically bombed one of their own, you know, housing complex that had, you know, women and children in it to get this rise out of the Russian people that the Chechen terrorists are coming into our country and killing people, killing Russians. And this gets this whole spin off on why we need to go and, you know, kill a bunch of Chechens. I wouldn't doubt if certain elements of the FSB or Russia's secret service were behind the assassination of this guy's daughter. So it's not I don't think it's the Ukrainian special forces or secret service folks. I'm pretty sure it's an FSB operation designed to whip up, or it's internal fighting amongst the various intelligence services and security services in Russia. We can't look at Russia as a single monolithic entity, or Putin has everybody behind him. This is a corrupt, cronyist regime. There are elements that are infighting right now that are looking at the future to when Putin loses power. And so there is, much like you had in the Soviet Union, you have these different factions that are behind the scenes battling for supremacy. And there are some elements in Russian society that say we shouldn't be doing this. So I could very easily see other elements within the Russian intelligence or security services doing something like this. And we can expect to see more of those kinds of things, particularly if the economy continues to crater in Russia and the public opinion starts slowly drifting away to the occupation of the Ukraine.
Is the opposition to Putin inside? I mean, I'm sure there's people in the inner circle that aren't liking what's happening here, and they maybe see an opening to see, we could, you know, this might be the time. This might be the time to get him. But do they have to wait for public opinion to turn at a certain percentile, a certain feel, a certain aura surrounding some of his decision making before they make a move. I mean, do you see the only way he goes down is he's overthrown from the inside? Or is his machinery that he's put in place so vast, so wide, so big that that's not a possibility?
There's a lot of that's a lot to unpack there. Russian culture, from what I understand, is it is very security conscious. I mean, they are concerned about. I mean, they and there is a certain level of obedience that, you know, but they're also they are survivors. And I'm not out, you know, Putin is a survivor. He could very easily, you know, look at the situation and say, okay, I'm just going to cut my losses and run. But once again, those factions within the Russian society, within the Russian intelligence or security services, I don't think they care too much about public opinion. My impression is that they believe that they can shape and mold public opinion to whatever they want. So the public, how the public feels about it, it will have some play, but for the most part, it's going to be where the weak points within the security services are and who they put in charge and how they can present that information to the public. Obviously, the longer this drags out, the more impact it has on Russian economy. It's going to be easier for those intelligence services and security services to do that kind of thing. But at the same time, Putin is paranoid, and he's going to, I think he's going to start cracking down on that as well. So it's, you know, those are hard tea leaves to read. I'm sorry about that.
No. That's okay, John. Let's turn back a little bit to Ukraine and the conflict and moving forward now. Recently, we saw that they were allowing grain to come out of the port.
Right.
And so getting the economy a little bit started up for Ukraine again, and of course helps around the world with that. How long or how much more is the U.S., you think, going to be? Here's $3 billion more dollars going towards military training and help to the Ukrainians.
Right.
How much longer, or is it just going to be continued until this conflict is resolved, that the U.S. is going to be sending billions of dollars and continually funneling to the Ukrainian people?
Right. Our defense budget to defend the United States, and that includes the CIA and all our special folks, I mean, it approaches nearly $1 trillion a year. $25 billion in that vast pool of money is relatively insignificant. The message that what is being told to the American people, and I believe the message, but we are supporting a relatively free people against a naked Russian aggression against their soil. Most Americans don't understand how their tax dollars are being spent. When we look at the amount of money that we're giving to the Ukrainians to defend themselves, in relation to our defense budget globally, it's a relatively low number. I think that, you know, you're going to get messages, you're going to get people spinning this on the right and spinning this on the left to say this is a waste of money or we shouldn't be there. But the vast majority, and I would argue the vast majority of conservatives, real conservative Republicans, and the liberal Democrats who do support, you know, freedom and democracy or whatever that is out throughout the world, that bulk will continue to support the Ukrainian cause for however long it takes. Because it really isn't a... I mean, once we get the inflation under control in the United States, and a lot of that was driven by the gas prices and the oil prices spike after the Russians invaded Ukraine, once that becomes under control, as you said, we're opening up, or the Russians and the Ukrainians are releasing grain, a lot of that has to do with public relations on a global perspective from Russia's perspective, because the Russians, the people that are going to be starving, Syria depends upon Ukrainian grain for its bread prices. So there's a lot of reasons why the Russians and Ukrainians are opening up that grain shipments again. So I think that once we get that oil those gas prices stabilized, the American people will just, it'll just be background noise. Oh, yeah, we're supporting the Ukrainians and, you know, Slava Ukraine, and it'll make us feel good, and, you know, we'll check that block and then move on with our day. It's not going to affect the average American, and it's going to be out of our mind, just like the $700 billion or $800 billion a year we spend on defense, or the nearly $1 trillion once you throw all that stuff in. Most of us don't think about that. Most of us don't think about how we can use that money in a different way. We see this as a, it's just not there in our heads.
You had mentioned earlier that the end game has kind of changed a little bit for the Russians when it comes to Ukraine, and that initially they thought, hey, we're going to come in, we're going to have a quick change in leadership, and we're going to be able to just run roughshod right through the country. And that has not happened. Do you see the Ukrainians giving up any type of land? I mean, you said right now there are certain sections that the Russians control, but do you see the Ukrainians ceding any type of land if this winds down? Are they going to fight for every inch of their established border?
Well, I mean, Zelensky is a politician, and so he has to get elected, and he has to have his support. So he's going to beat his chest saying, we're going to take back every inch of Ukrainian land. At a certain point, he realizes that the Europeans and the United States have to bankroll this retaking of the Crimean Peninsula and retaking of all of every inch of Ukrainian territory, even if they're just still, I mean, there's really only Russians there anyways. So I think what we're hearing from Zelensky and the Ukrainian government is just, it's just chest pounding. We need to take back every inch. At the end of the day, and by the end of the day, it could be next summer, there may be some backdoor deal saying, yeah, you can keep parts of Crimea, or you can keep Crimea. We'll just wind this stuff down. And I think that's what Putin is aiming for, is this idea that it'll get put on a back burner, we'll lose interest. The Ukrainians will settle for less than all of the Ukraine. And I don't think that's a wrong calculation on Putin's part. I think that at a certain point, there'll be a weariness, and it will depend upon how the elections go in Europe and in the United States, particularly from a public opinion standpoint. The public opinion in the United States if we get riled up and saying we shouldn't be spending money because, this is an adventure, and you get the leftist and you get the tree huggers on the left saying, we've got to stop this, and you get the right wing, the people against, whatever, saying that, we shouldn't be doing this stuff. If that coalesces into a faction that can have influence in American politics, then we could see a movement away from supporting the Ukrainian people. But I don't see that as a potentiality, but I really don't see that as happening, because I don't think there's enough Americans that either A, give a flying leap, or B, most of us do believe that what's happening in the Ukraine is wrong and that Russia should be punished in some way or in some form or fashion. And as long as American troops aren't being killed and American soldiers aren't coming back in body bags, most Americans are willing to just, spend that money to support the Ukrainians. But I don't think at the end of the day, and the end of the day, once again, could be next summer or a couple of years, parts of what were Ukraine in like 2013 will still be under Russia's control, most likely Crimea.
All right. Well, John, we're going to leave it there for this morning. We could go on for hours.
it's a fascinating topic, and it has so many what's going on in America, globally. It's just,
right.
And then, of course, you have China and Taiwan. It's all the stuff is interconnected, and the more you realize it's interconnected, the more it becomes.
I think, as you mentioned, though, John, as the next news cycle comes around and the next big thing hits, and everybody kind of shifts. Oh, look, squirrel. Okay, this is now what we're talking about. So, we'll just have to wait and see. And like you said, the midterms will play a big part in what happens here moving forward. But for now, it's there, and it's hit the 6-month. I don't want to say deadline, but it's hit the anniversary, I guess we can say. John. Well, John, listen, we appreciate it. John Crosby over at Chico State, political science lecturer and faculty there. John, always appreciate your time. We'll do it again as this continues and other things come up. Thank you.